Welcome to the Issue Is podcast. I'm Alex Michelson. After a crazy few weeks, we have a sort of back to regular show this week, a moment to catch our breaths, think about what's been happening over the last few weeks and talk about it with some different perspectives. Joining us is the Republican congressman from Rockland, Kevin Kiley, who got a lot of attention for his responses to our show about Governor Newsom. So we heard from Governor Newsom a few weeks ago. So this week we hear from Congressman Kiley with his view on the week of APEC, when so much of the China-U.S. relationship was center stage here in California. And later we have some analysis on all of this, where Biden's at and Trump and Newsom and everything happening in politics, with two of the smartest political minds, who I think are great together, Brian Goldsmith and Lynn Vavreck. But let's start with Congressman Kiley, who we talked to on this big week in California politics when Joe Biden and the entire administration came to town to host APEC. Congressman, welcome back to The Issue Is.
Thanks, Alex. Great to be with you.
It seemed like California really rolled out the carpet for the leader of China. What do you make of that choice?
Well, it's really embarrassing. I mean, what I wish is that we would roll out the red carpet for our own citizens rather than for a person that President Biden just described as a communist dictator. In the weeks leading up to this conference, there was this frantic effort to clean up the city. And Gavin Newsom even admitted that the reason they did it is just because, quote, all those fancy people are coming into town. And obviously what's going on here is that we have a governor who used to be the mayor of San Francisco, and this city is absolutely collapsing. It's losing people faster than any major city in U.S. history, faster than Detroit, then it went bankrupt. The homelessness, the open-air drug use, the crime, are absolutely out of control. And Newsom realized that with the world watching, if the realities of San Francisco were on display, it was going to be very embarrassing for him. It was certainly going to undermine his claim that California is somehow a model for the nation. And so a city and state that have been unwilling to impose, you know, basic law and order and standards of cleanliness in our cities for our own citizens did everything they possibly could in preparation for President Xi and other foreign leaders.
And of course, that raises the question, why can't we do that all the time? And what if we did that all the time? So we know that Governor Newsom was trying to impress President Xi. Just a few weeks ago when we were in China, he told us that he wanted to make him a Warriors fan when he came here. We've got some video of this. This is from CCTV of Xi receiving a Golden State Warrior jersey from the governor. Xi had told the governor during our visit a couple weeks ago that he was a big Kobe fan and a big Laker fan. So the governor had told me during our trip that China is California's number one trading partner, that war with China is bad for everyone, so we got to get along. Doesn't he have a point there?
Well, I'll say first, Alex, you know, as a lifelong Sacramento Kings fan, I won't bring up the Kings-Lakers game this last week. But
Kings won big. Congratulations. That, do it in the playoffs and try to win 17 titles. But that's a whole other thing.
We'll get there. you know, what happened with the governor's visit to China was a huge propaganda win for the CCP. He went there and refused to talk about the fentanyl situation in any meaningful way, that China is supplying the Mexican cartels with the fentanyl precursor ingredients that are killing thousands of Californians a year. He refused to bring up the human rights abuses that are going on there and claimed that this trip was about the climate. But to quote the select committee chairman on the Chinese Communist Party, Mike Gallagher, that's like a firefighter partnering with an arsonist. China has an abysmal environmental record. They account for 33% of the world's greenhouse emissions. They increased their overall emissions by 10% last year. So the whole trip was really just an absolute failure of leadership. I think it was embarrassing for our state, frankly.
Although the governor says he did bring up the fentanyl issue directly with Xi. But to that point about their problems on the climate, don't you have to talk with them to get them to move on that front?
Well, they've shown very little sign of making any progress whatsoever, and I'm not sure I saw any tangible takeaways from the governor's trip. I mean, they're bringing two coal plants online every week in China. And by the way, Alex, California has a terrible environmental record as well. When you look at the emissions that come out of these catastrophic wildfires that we have, it erases all of the gains from all of the emissions reduction regulations and programs that we have in the state.
You've reacted pretty strongly to the interview that we did with Governor Newsom in China when I brought up the issue of COVID. Let's put up a tweet that you put out. You called this a lie of historic proportions. This is the video you're discussing when I asked him about school closures due to fears about the pandemic.
Schools shut down too long.
I mean, in certain parts of the state, they were open. Yeah. And that we gave local control. Remember, California has 1,050 school districts. We have a local system, the local control funding formula. It's a constitutional construct. It allows localism. And we advance localism. We didn't have command and control. So the question is, do we want to shift that policy and allow a dominant force in Sacramento to determine the fate of local school districts?
Your response to that?
Well, look, you know me, I'm not someone who goes around accusing people of being liars. I don't think that's a healthy thing generally for political discourse, but there is no other word for what the governor just said than an absolutely absurd and malicious lie. For months and months and months, for years, our local communities begged for local control. We said, just let us dictate our own fate rather than having to answer to mandates issued from on high from Sacramento. When it came to school shutdowns, the governor was one of the only governors in the country that did a statewide school shutdown order going into the fall of 2020. And California was the last state in getting kids back to school out of the 50 states. We were absolutely dead last, and those harms are going to stick with us for generations to come. But you can look across any number of mandates that happened throughout the COVID era. Let's take one clear example. When it came to youth sports, there was a state order that prevented kids from playing youth sports. California was pretty much the only state in the country that was doing that after a while. I mean, this wasn't just at the very beginning. This went on for months and months and months, well into 2021, 2022. The governor, even, and you'll remember this, Alex, in October of 2021, announced a student vaccine mandate. He crowed that he was the first governor in the country to do this. California was leading the way. We were the first state. Not a single other state did it. And so then the next year, Newsom had to withdraw that student vaccine mandate in humiliation. And by the way, what was the end result of all of these command and control mandates from Sacramento, which were worse in California than anywhere in the country? We had among the worst public health outcomes as well. And so the governor realizes this. He realizes that his COVID record was absolutely abysmal. And so now he's trying to rewrite history. But I think it's very important that we make sure that the truth gets out and that the consequences of his failed leadership are not forgotten.
And one of the good things about this show is you get to hear from both sides. Obviously, a very different perspective from Governor Newsom. Well, I could talk to you all day, but we are out of time. Our political panel is up next. But Congressman, before we go, you know we always like to end with something fun. So I hear you're a fan of Hamilton and specifically the song Wait For It. Why is that?
Did I tell you that at one point?
You did.
I just think it's an amazing song. I think remember the first time I watched that. Actually, I never got to see it in person. I watched it on Disney Plus. I was just blown away, and I thought that was the best song on the track. And I think that the actor who played Burr,
Leslie Odom Jr., who won the Tony for it, and who I did get to see it live with him. He's amazing. So we go to break with that song inspired by you, Congressman Kiley. Thanks so much. Here's Leslie Odom Jr. Our thanks to Congressman Kiley. Now let's get some analysis on this from our all-star panel.
He and I agreed that each one of us could pick up the phone, call directly, and we'd be heard immediately.
President Biden discussing his conversations with Chinese President Xi at APEC. California really the center of the political universe this week. Here to discuss all of this is our political panel and two of my all-time favorites. Lynn Vavreck teaches politics at UCLA, is a best-selling author and a contributor to the New York Times. Brian Goldsmith is a Democratic campaign consultant after reaching the heights of national political reporting. Great to see both of you guys back here on the show. Lynn, let's start with you. President Biden here at APEC, obviously with a bunch of world leaders. Does this sort of thing help him politically? Do voters care about this sort of thing?
I would say the answer to the first question is that it is not a bad thing politically, so there may be some help there. Do voters care about it? I would say not as much as they care about the state of the nation's economy or how easy or hard it is for them to buy things, buy a new car, go on vacation, but it's not a bad thing.
And Brian, your takeaway from him this week and all of these images?
I think it helps to buttress the case that he's a strong leader. who can get things done. Yes, he's old, but with the age comes wisdom and the capacity to get big things done. So he resumed the military-to-military contacts. He got the anti-fentanyl deal done. He's even bringing back the pandas,
yes,
which is going to resonate with a lot of voters. So I think over and over again, you've seen Biden. Maybe he doesn't present as effectively as Clinton or Obama, but he's very good at getting things done.
But presenting is pretty important in California in national politics as well. And you look at him, and he is old, right? He makes no secret about the fact. But you look at polls increasingly show that voters say he's too old, that Democrats want somebody else. Is there an actual scenario where he's not the nominee, short of some sort of health scare, where he just decides, you know what, I've done it, I'm moving on, maybe after Thanksgiving, give somebody else a shot?
I don't see that happening. I think he's made the decision to run. He's the sitting president who's accomplished a lot, and he's going to be the nominee of the Democratic Party. So my message to Democrats who are uncomfortable is, you know, you've had your say, your message has been received, but get over it, because this is going to be a choice between Joe Biden and almost certainly Donald Trump. It's going to be a watershed election for the country with everything that Democrats care about on the line. And so, you know, Biden's going to be the candidate.
Meanwhile, there are other Democrats that seem to be running sort of shadow campaigns just in case we're here, including Governor Newsom this week on the world stage right next to Biden. Biden saying, yeah, he could, you know, do my job. Here he is, looking like a president, sitting next to the leader of Canada. What do you make of all the moves of Governor Newsom over the last few weeks, including going to China?
Well, I think there could be a lot of dimensions to this. The first is the one you suggested, which is he wants to be in a position to say, I've done a good job in California. California leads on a number of things, and so I'm ready to take that to the next level. It could also be that he truly cares about these issues, climate, electric energy, these kinds of things, and really wants to advance society in that way. He's got a platform to do it right now. He might not always have it. So there are lots of possibilities.
And it's possible that both those things are true at the same time. But you know, the challenge for him politically is he is the governor of California, not the president of the United States. And we saw a poll that just came out recently from UC Berkeley that showed for the first time ever, California voters disapprove of his job as governor, 49% disapproval. And that sort of gets to the point that they would rather him focus on issues here. We saw this week he's got this big APEC conference, but then repeatedly he comes to the 10 freeway in Los Angeles trying to show that he's in charge, announcing that the construction's going faster than expected, focusing on California issues.
Yeah, the 10 matters more than what's happening in Shenzhen. And I think his team has gotten that message. I don't think California voters, you know, like as much to see him on the world stage or traveling outside the state. People feel, as Lynn said, squeezed by high prices, squeezed by the cost of housing, concerned about issues like infrastructure. And so he ought to focus on that. And the more effective he is as governor, the better his presidential prospects down the road.
You can't say, I did a great job, so take me to the next level, if you didn't do a great job. Mm. So you kind of have to focus on the local.
When you look at the polling, which is one of your expertise, and you look at who would be the strongest Democratic nominee, is it Biden? Is it Newsom? Is it Gretchen Whitmer from Michigan? Is it Kamala Harris? What does it look like?
Yeah, that's a way easier question than I thought you were going to ask me. If Biden is in the set, it's Joe Biden. This is an election that might literally be a repeat of 2020, and he won that election, and it's going to be very close again. And he's a demonstrated winner. Like, yes, Biden.
Do you agree with that?
I think Biden could be the strongest candidate. I don't think we really know, because the difference between a theoretical candidate for president and an actual candidate for president, as we've seen with Ron DeSantis, is enormous. But I would say Biden is coming into this election with significantly weaker numbers than he had 4 years ago. The White House and his campaign are aware of that. But I think Democrats are right to be focused and concerned and, you know, not taking this election for granted.
Meanwhile, there's another issue that's come up in the last few weeks, which is Israel. We know Governor Newsom traveled there, and it's splitting the Democratic Party. Does that split, especially with some of these younger people on college campuses who are trying to demonstrate as more pro-Palestine, does that hurt President Biden?
Well, it's splitting the Democratic Party under 35. It is not splitting the Democratic Party writ large. If you look at the national polling, it's about 9-10% of the country, that's it, that disapproves of Biden's handling of the war and wants us to be more pro-Palestinian. The Democratic leadership of Congress is pro-Israel, the Democratic president is pro-Israel, and in key swing states, from Pennsylvania to Georgia to Arizona, I actually think this issue is a net winner for Joe Biden.
Although we have seen nationally that the biggest drop-off for Joe Biden's support in polls is young people, is people under 35, and that could be an issue going into next year. Up next, we talk about the Republicans. We talked about them a little bit, but first, we want to go to some new music. And out this week, new music from Dolly Parton. You know, she's a rock star now. She literally has an album called Rockstar. And so this is her singing rock and roll and singing Rockstar.
Can you believe it, folks? 91 indictments, 4 trials, and I'm still the best choice.
Saturday Night Live making fun of Donald Trump's dominance over the Republican presidential field. Take a look at this average of national polls from Real Clear Politics. Trump close to 60%, with Ron DeSantis way back at 15%. Here with our political panel, analysts Brian Goldsmith and Lynn Vavreck. Brian, to SNL's point, he has all these indictments. Right. He has all this baggage, and yet his numbers keep going up. He's even beating Biden in a lot of polls. How is he doing this?
I think his supporters believe that it's the deep state coming after him. I think people are looking back at the economic performance during his presidency when things cost less, and the Trump scandals and the stuff Trump is saying and proposing have not really been in the news. But I agree. It is shocking to me. I think that this whole campaign is going to come down to, can somebody beat Trump in Iowa or New Hampshire? And if that doesn't happen, he's the nominee.
And right now, it looks like the polls show that he's running away with it in both of those places. Ron DeSantis now in 5th place in a newest poll out of New Hampshire. What are these other guys doing, the other candidates in the Republican field?
Well, you know, you want to be there just in case. So you also want to establish a reputation on the national stage. They're all pretty young, so there's lots of time in the future. It's a long game.
Yeah, I mean, we got this weird scenario, Brian, where you have this debate, which is kind of like a farce, because the one guy who's dominating all of them isn't even there, and there's this discussion like one of these people is going to be the nominee, and it looks like there's almost no path for any of them.
But it's accomplished one important thing. It is established that Nikki Haley is the whole ballgame. She is the only candidate, I believe, who could conceivably be a Trump alternative or in a one-on-one with Trump. She has to come in 2nd in Iowa, at least, and she has to win New Hampshire. If she does that, this is a momentum game. These things do move late. Half the Republican Party is not super comfortable with Donald Trump, is open to an alternative, and she was the governor of South Carolina, which is going to be, I think, the decisive contest. Mm.
And Lynn, you look at the polls so closely. She polls a lot better than Donald Trump does against Joe Biden. She beats him in almost every poll.
Yeah, a lot of this is because people don't know a lot about her. So, you know, you have to sort of, you know, remember what Brian said a couple minutes ago about a theoretical candidate. She is a little bit a theoretical candidate now. That will change once we get to Iowa and New Hampshire. But for sure, this whole process really has been to her benefit.
Meanwhile, it has not been to the benefit of Ron DeSantis, who came into this in a lot of ways beating Donald Trump in some polls. And now he's got this debate coming up on Fox News Channel November 30th with California Governor Gavin Newsom. What are each of them trying to get out of this? Because when they first scheduled this, both of them were sort of in different places.
Well, DeSantis is trying to rally Republicans to his side against a boogeyman of the right. That's pretty easy. Newsom, for somebody who has sub-zero interest, as he said, in ever running for president, you know, I think he's trying to get as much national attention as possible. Whether that's actually smart for his national prospects, I think that's to be determined.
This is a fight for what kind of country this is going to be. And I think that's how, if I were the producer of this thing, right, that's how I would be framing this, because I think it could get a lot of eyeballs.
Very different visions for America, what we're doing in California versus what they're doing in Florida,
yeah,
which kind of represent bigger themes for the whole country. All right, well, last question, which is like the most important question. When should Christmas season start? Is it after Thanksgiving or now? Because it seems like we've moved on this.
I have to say, I noticed when I walked into the studio today that Christmas and the holiday season is in full force here at Fox 11.
Too early. Too early. I don't know. Your take on that?
You're asking the Jew about when the Christmas season should begin. I don't know. When does Hanukkah start?
Well,
I mean,
Hanukkah's
Irving Berlin was Jewish, so I guess I have some authority.
A lot of Jews make money off of Christmas season because almost all of the music is written by Jews.
Interesting.
But the biggest song of all is not written by a Jew, but by Mariah Carey, who is performing in California this weekend. So here it is, whether you're ready for it or not.
Don't do it.
We go to break with Mariah Carey. Our thanks to Congressman Kiley and to Brian Goldsmith and to Lynn Vavreck and to you for listening. For some extras, you can check out my YouTube page. I talked to Pete Buttigieg, the Secretary of Transportation, about the 10 freeway fire. Also talked with Eleni Kounoulakis, the Lieutenant Governor of California, about the APEC conference. You can see both of those at youtube.com/AlexMichelson. Next week, we focus on gratitude on this week of Thanksgiving. In the meantime, I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening. See you next time.